So the Torah discusses in Parashat Shmini, Re'eh, discusses the laws of kashrus, the kosher animals. So we'll discuss a little bit. We'll try to cover, we'll see how far we get. We try to cover the wide world of kashrus with obviously talking about the general behemoths and chayas, the domestic animals and the non-domestic, the which birds are kosher and the fish about having fins and scales, get into swordfish and other things, and then getting into so we'll get into probably the zebo, the bison, the turkey, the Muscovy duck, the giraffe, maybe locust. We'll see what we have time for, and we'll have to continue another time. So let's begin then. So the Torah tells us it makes it relatively easy for animals, for behemoths, but we call it domestic, even though it's probably not totally accurate according to what I read different places, that there could be some behemoths that aren't domestic and some chayes which are, but that's how it's generally assumed, that domestic land animals are known for the behemoth. So it's the same requirement, shu da kud, and they have to have completely split hooves. And the same halacha for non-domestic animals, they also have to have shu its kud and split hooves. We'll get the difference between a behemoth and a chaya shortly. And the fish needs fins and scales. And the Torah gives us a list of 24 non-kosher species of birds, and then the implication the rest are permitted. We have to figure out, you know, how we get there. So the Mishnah and Chulin, the Gemara talks about para bas gomel. Let's say a cow gives birth to a camel. In other words, you know, obviously it's some type of genetic thing, whatever happens. So obviously you look at it, it doesn't have any, it's not chewing, it's got a split hooves. So obviously if you didn't know it came from a para, it would definitely be usher. But let's say you knew it came from a para. So therefore, the Mishnah says it's a go. It's kosher, Jewish mommy, nothing to discuss. Right, it came from a kosher animal, just like a baby comes out of a Jewish mom, end of discussion, it's kosher. I mean, Jewish and kosher. And then the Mishnah continues, gomo bas para. What about the reverse? A gomo bas para. A camel gives birth to a para, meaning this animal does have chews its cud and split hooves. Yeah, the reverse. So the Gemara says, the Chazal tell us that's a no-go. That's not good. So the question is, why not? So, because it depends, why is a para bas gomel good? Is it because it came from a... In other words, what's the requirement for a kosher animal? Is it enough just to have simani kashrus? So then, obviously, the gomel bas para would be good. But clearly, it's not good. So, or is it... In other words, do you need simani kashrus and a Jewish mom? So that's the question. So that's what the Piskei Tshuva writes. The two possible reasons why a gomel bas para is no good. Either because, really, it's a para. So it's a kosher animal. It has the simani kashrus. But the problem is, it's a yotze min asur. We have a general, something which comes from a forbidden source is also asur. So really, it's a min tahora. Except I can't eat it for technical halakhic problems, but really it's classified as a kosher animal. Or do I say no? It's a min tummy. You need both, according to the first stage, as long as you have either simani, kashrus, or a Jewish mom, you're good. That's the first opinion. Or no, you need both. So therefore it's a min tummy and there's nothing to go. My nafkemina, what's the practical difference? If I say, either way I can't eat it, what's the difference if I consider it a min tahar, but it just comes from a forbidden source, or that it's not a kosher animal? So the nafkamina would be, number one, is if you eat the, let's say you drink the milk from this animal. So if you drink the milk, you know, or so therefore, if you, so according to the Machlokes Rishonim, what's the penalty if you eat something Yotzei Min HaAsur? So it's, some say there's no makas, even though it's an Issur D'oraisa. Others say it's makas. So there's no nafkamina, community, you can't eat it. The question is what the onish would be if you get a good old-fashioned whooping. Or as the Piskei Tshuva brings down, a more of a practical difference would be, what's the difference if it's labeled a behemoth tahora or not? If I can't eat it, who cares? A major nafkamina, because the halacha is, the Gemara in Shabbos talks about for the Mishkan. I think the Tachash over there, they had get into a whole discussion. You need a kosher animal for Melecha Shamayim. That's why they discuss it by Tfilin. Lamantia Torah Hashem Beficha has to be from a kosher animal, Behemah Tahora, and the Klafim you write on, you know, for Torah and Tfilin. So it has to be. So the Nafkamin is, If it's a behemoth tahora, it says I can't eat it for technical reasons. I could use it for cloth, but if it's treif, I can't use it for cloth. We'll come back to when we discuss the zebu. We'll get into the discussion more. So either way, so therefore, that's a discussion whether you need both factors. Whether you need, it has to be from a Jewish mother. That's what we assume, because the gamo paspara isn't kosher. It has the simanim. So therefore, we assume you need a Jewish mommy, a Jewish para, and you need timanim. Actually, you don't need timanim. If it's a Jewish mother, we said para bas kamo is good. So the question comes up is, we have a tradition. We know what certain behemoths are. The behemoths we know, like there are like cattle, sheep, goats, like certain behemoths we know, and they have the timanim. I think the only clear-cut chaya we know is a deer. So we know it's a chaya. So what's the difference? Either way, they both have to chew its cud, and they have split hooves. So what's the difference between a chaya? How do I know the difference between a chaya and a behemoth? And who cares? So the difference is, it has to do with the horns. How, you know, the way the horns are certain, it has to do with how you define the horns, whether it's a chaya or a behemoth, because they both have the kosher sign. So it seems to be clear, all we need is simanim by a kosher animal. However, the shach puts a monkey wrench into this, or I should say, and then what the shach means. In other words, we'll come back to turkey and miscavi duck in a while, but by bird, since we don't know, the Gemara doesn't give us a list of what birds. It only gives 24 which are in kosher. So therefore, we need a mesorah. So I think Tosfos and Chulin points out we have a mesorah. You know, well, it comes from Moshe Rabbeinu, but the mesorah then comes, you know, originally comes from Noach. How do we know which birds are kosher, which ones aren't? So either way, so by birds. Well, the Shulchan Aruch talks about a swamp chicken. Even the rabbis made a mistake. They thought the bird was kosher, then they found that it had some of the non-kosher signs. It was a dores. It was trampled. So therefore, they got rid of it. So Rashi said, therefore, therefore Rashi. See, Gemara talks about if you have a mesorah on a bird or a mesorah without the simanim, you can eat it. The Gemara uses it lakula. Rashi brings it l'chumra and the Ramah. So the Ramah writes that bizman hazeh, since we don't know, we need a mesorah for birds. We'll see this. The Machaber doesn't bring it down. It'll be a difference with Sfardim and Ashkenaz. But the Ramah writes, so we assume that you need a mesorah by birds. We'll come back to the turkey and the Muscovy duck in a minute. So comes along, that's clear, that's right in the Ramah. But comes along the shach, and it makes a cryptic comment. He says, not only do, just like birds need a, he says something about, just like birds need a mesorah, so too, he says something about chayas, something, so too animals. So it's not clear what the shach means. Like, what's the, we have simanim, and by birds it makes sense you need a mesorah. What do I need a mesorah by animals? Just take a look and that's it. So it's a famous debate between the Prima Gadin versus the Chachmas Adam. Darach HaShulchan, and we'll see the Chaz and Ish will be on the other side also, on what the Shach means. It will have major implications to these new species, those that we're not familiar with, those that have the Simanim, let's say a bison's a buffalo. The Shulchan Aruch talks about a different buffalo, like a water buffalo. But this clearly the bison, what they didn't know about. So a bison is a buffalo. It's a new animal that wasn't around, but it has the Simani Kashris, or I'll tell you, or the Zebu that came from Argentina and other places. It had the Simani Kashris, but it looks different than a cow. It has like humps on its back, skin. So the Prima Gadin writes, what does the Shach mean? So the Shach's not saying that if you don't have a Mesorah to know the difference between Chaya and Behema, you can't eat it. That's not what he's saying. It's a nuance in Halakha, he's saying, that since there are differences between Behema and Chayas, let's say that by Behema there's an Isser Echelev, on the same spot on the animal, on the Chaya, there is no Isser. There's a mitzvah of Kisei Adam on Chayas, not on Behemas. There's an Isser of Oso Vespino applies to Behemas. So therefore, we have to know what a Chaya or a Behema is. But he's saying, of course, it's kosher. Therefore, the issue would be, let's say you have an animal, a new animal has Simani Kashris, but we don't know, we can't definitively define it as a Chaya or a Behema, so we have to go with Chumra. So we can't eat the Chel of the animal, and we have to do Kisai Dam without a Bracha. So that's all the that's how the Prima Gadin says, but of course the animal's kosher. You just machmir, you just go chumra in both directions if you don't know. I guess the deer is the only one so I guess in theory, the deer we know for sure, so you can eat the chalev and you can make a bracha on the kisa adam. And we could discuss where giraffes fit in and all of that. Sure. Yeah, so bison, we'll get to bison, right? I'll get to bison in a minute. That's why. So according to the Prima Gadin, so there's no problem, we'll see, with the zebu or the bison, because they have simani kashrus. Okay, so then, if you're not sure, so worst case, don't eat the chalev, and you'll do kisa adami safek, but it's definitely a kosher animal. Comes along the Chachmas Adam, and the Aruch HaShulchan, and the Chazon Ish, who rules the day in Eretz Yisrael, he says, no way. What the Shach's saying, you can't eat the animal. If you don't have a Mesorah, it's like birds, you can't eat it without. So too, if we're not sure, without a Mesorah, you can't even eat it. So what happened was in the 1950s, a big tumult broke out between... See, first, the rabbi there in the 30s was Rev Yitzchak HaKohen Cook. Was that his name, Yitzchak? Rev Cook HaKohen. And then Rev Unterman was the chief rabbi after him. And I think Rev Unterman was the chief rabbi after him. So either way, so Rev Herzog was the chief rabbi. And he, in the 1950s, so what happened was, there was a big tumult, I guess they were bringing the Zebu over from Argentina. So Rev Herzog said the Zebu was good. Number one, he goes with Prima Gadin. Yeah, first of all, it has to see Mani Kashris, and that's it. If you want to be machmir on those issues, go right ahead. But, you know, and the Chazon Ish said, no, we need a Mesorah. Since we don't have a Mesorah, so Rav Herzog claimed we did have a Mesorah, people were eating it in India, but whatever it was, so he gave in to the Chazon Ish, and in the 50s, they weren't eating Zebu. See, the advantage of Zebu is that it has the positives in terms of, like, it drinks a lot less water. In Israel, it's a hot climate. The meat's better. There's a lot of pros to it. That's why they wanted to get Zebu into the, you know, and we'll see. There are a lot of pros of it. So that's what they wanted. However, then another tumult broke out about 15 years ago, every 50 years. And they found out in B'nai Brak that they had Zebu meat, so they were saying everything's treif until they found out that really all the shops, even in B'nai Brak, had Zebu meat. You know, and then to the bottom line is, they've come to realize that some are still indifferent to the Chazon Ish, won't eat the Zebo meat, but they won't eat the meat. But now they went to see what happened was, the Zebo. Then they started since then, or now maybe they've been doing it before. But the Zebo, they've been crossbreeding with the cow. So we have a Gemara in Bechoras which says only kosher animals could crossbreed. If you could have kids, that means therefore, you're not allowed to crossbreed, but the Goyim did it, and once it's done, it's still mutter. So therefore, they, and also I think they were crossbreeding it 3/8 and 5/8 in order to make the meat better and the milk. So then, until they realized that So the Zebo really, you know, so maybe now it has a Mesora. We've been eating it all those years. So even those who are machmir, like the Chazon Ish, not to eat Zebo meat directly, even them, they may go on an indirect, like a milk from the Zebo they'll eat. And also, they had to change their mind because all the Sifrei Torah were written on Zebo meat. So if they're going to say the Zebo meat's not kosher, that means they're true. So the bottom line is, so, you know, we accepted today that it's kosher. But in Eretz Yisrael, it's still in Bnei Brak, those who follow the Chazon Ish. So there's some who won't eat it or won't give Hashkaka, but basically it's generally accepted now, you know, and every 50 years, the tumult breaks out again. So regarding the buffalo, so we don't go with the Chazon Ish in America. So therefore, we assume buffalo burgers are a go. And therefore, even though you don't have that much buffalo, but when it's okay, we assume in America you could eat buffalo. And I'm not sure, maybe they don't, in terms of the buffalo, I'm not sure if they're concerned it might be, if they view it as a defa behema, or if they view it as a suffix, so all they won't do is they won't eat the chalev and they'll do kisei adam. But in general, we assume that we don't need a mesora on, a mesora is limited to birds because there's so many, you know, we don't really have any idea that we don't have any real simanim. Chazal give us simanim, but the Torah doesn't. So we assume basically we have simanim, that when it comes to cows, it's a siba, that basically if it has the kosher sign, so by definition it's kosher. So, you know, except if we know it comes from a gomel. But generally speaking, you know, we're not choshish for those situations. And therefore, we don't have to worry it's a kosher animal. And the distinct masora, that's just more, it's more for the other thing. So that was the buffalo and zebu. So regarding, giraffe, so there's big misconception regarding giraffes, that people think that the reason why we don't eat giraffes is because why? Is because, yeah, because we don't know how to shech them, which is a little ironic because that's probably the easiest animal to shech. In other words, anyone who knows anything about shechita, that's the misconception. I think they have it in one of the, it's such a big, misconception. I think it's in one of those it's the equivalent to Haredi Wikipedia. Even in there, it talks about how and Jews don't eat giraffes because we don't know the makam hashchita. So that's totally not true. It's a halacha Moshe Misinai that you just have to check. You have to do shchita by the neck. So therefore, in fact, it's the easiest animal to do shchita on. Because there's one, because I think it's, so for a pigeon, it's a few inches long, the makam hashchita. For a cow, it's over 12 inches. And for a giraffe, it's close to six feet. Right, as one person said, anyone who doesn't know, we had a shech, the giraffe either doesn't know anything about shchita, you know, or is a terrible shochet, because it's the easiest animal to do. So if that's the case, so why don't we eat? So why don't we have many giraffes? And if that, so it's definitely kosher. Well, I wouldn't say it's definitely kosher, but it, in other words, it has the signs of a kosher animal. And if you go to the zoo, you'll check it out. And also, historically speaking, the Rav Sadia Gaon, Rabbi Yonah, and the Radak all call this, when in Parashas Re'eh, when it says the Zemer, they say it's talking about the giraffe. People say you need a Masorah, they say, well, Rav Sadia Gaon is a Masorah. And therefore, that's a debate. Some say the Zemer isn't the giraffe. I think some say it's the Tachash. But so number one, so you have that issue. So let's assume it is a giraffe. Let's assume we go with Rav Sadia Gaon. It is a giraffe, and we know the Makam Ashchita. So why aren't we doing it? Because the issue is, the many issues. One is, it costs $10,000 per kilo. I think in most states, except for Texas, it's us to have a giraffe. I think a giraffe costs about $30,000 US. So number one, it's too expensive. It would be a waste of money. Apparently, it doesn't taste so good. No one eats it in those countries in Africa, wherever they are. And they're very practically, they're hard to restrain. In fact, they say about the giraffe that if one kick of the giraffe could kill a lion. And there's concerns of it might lead to extinction. People like the giraffe. It's a protected species. And it's hard to, it'll be hard to slaughter the animal. The price, we said. So as someone went to, maybe that's why we don't have it. Maybe it'd be a good idea if you wanted to check one giraffe, so that you could keep the Misora, that we still have giraffes. So the bottom line is giraffes are, most assumed giraffes are kosher, but we're not eating. And the issue isn't Misora, the issue is pragmatic. So therefore we have the Zebo, which basically has been accepted today and by most. We have the bison, which is accepted. In fact, the Hasidim like the bison better, because in terms of the simanim by the neck, by the throat, it's much more glatt. It's easier to get glatt kosher meat, so they like the buffalo better. So that we take care of, so the bison we could eat, the bison buffalo we could eat, we could eat the zebu, and the giraffe in theory we could eat. We just, if you want to catch one and slaughter them, that's more of a challenge. So at least we came out good on the chayas and behemoths. Let's move on now to the birds. So it says the list of 24 birds, and we have a tradition from Noach or wherever, Moshe Rabbeinu, which are the kosher birds. So the issue is, and as we said, the Gemara in Chulin said, even the great rabbis made a mistake. I think it was called, they called it the chicken swamp bird, whatever it was. And they made a mistake, and therefore they were eating a non-kosher bird. So Rashi writes, therefore we should be careful, only eat birds with the Masorah. And the Ramah, in the Shulchan Aruch doesn't say anything about a Masorah, but the Ramah comes along and says, we don't eat birds without a Masorah, right? So the question was, so how do we eat the turkey then? What happened was Columbus came over, found the turkey, and he brought it back to Europe. So it's a new bird, and there was no Masorah on it. It couldn't have been a Masorah. It wasn't available. No one knew about it. Again, so those are different opinions historically. Like, did it come from, that's why some people call it the Indic. They think it came from India. But according to most, it really came from here. So what happened was Columbus brought it back to Europe, and people started eating it. So how do we eat the turkey? The bottom line is we eat the turkey. See, the giraffe is kosher. We don't eat it. The turkey, everyone eats, but is it kosher or not? How can we eat it? How can we eat the turkey if we don't have a Masorah? So that's a major discussion. And in fact, in the Tziv writes, if they would have asked me then, I would have told them they couldn't eat it. As we'll see, the difference between the turkey and the Muscovy duck could be all about timing. So you have to be in the right place at the right time. And as Rav Schechter likes saying, if turkey came out today, the Rabbanim are much more on top of it. They'd usher the turkey, because there was no Masorah. So what happened, the way Rav Schechter explains, what happened was, So the Columbus brought the turkey back to Europe, and and what happened was the Sephardim were eating it because they don't need a Masorah. So after 50 years or so, 50, 100 years, whatever it was, so it must be a Masorah because the Sephardim are eating it. But they didn't realize that the Sephardim don't need a Masorah. That's why they were eating it. But there never was a Masorah in Turkey. And in fact, so therefore, so that's what happened, according to Rav. So Rav Schachter himself doesn't eat turkey. He holds you need a Masorah, and there is none. And there always been tzaddikim, the Shloha HaKodesh, in the Horowitz family, Halevi, they have a tradition not to eat turkey. And a friend of mine who, he's a Rosh Yeshiva now, and while you were of David Horowitz, we took a road trip to Toronto a long time ago for a wedding when I was, we were in YU together. He's a little older, but I think it was Rav Chaim Soloveitchik's wedding, I'm not even sure. So either way, he says that he comes from that family. He says he has family members, people part of the Shva's descendants. It's so strong not to eat turkey that these people they eat treif on Yom Kippur, but they won't eat turkey. So, everyone has their own, everyone picks their own things. Obviously, turkey was a big issue for the Shua. Sounds like Yaakov Kamenetsky, but it came from his wife's side. So the bottom line is, and Rav Shlomo Kluger, then he said, who cares? America, they don't know anything. There was no Talmidei Chachamim, there's no Masorah. Are you kidding me? He ushered turkey. But the bottom line is, in the Tziv and many others, that was a couple, he said a couple hundred years later, all the Jews are eating turkey. So he said, if it would have came to me now, I probably would have said not to eat it. But now that it's here, so what's pshat in the Tziv? What does he mean? What do you mean? I'm eating treif. When they found out that the birds were treif, they stopped eating them. What does that mean? What does the Tziv mean? So different ways to understand the Tziv. So some say this he means to say like this, that so Columbus came back to Europe. He probably brought the turkey in the early 1500s, 20, 30, right? Something like that. And the Rama was born, he was in the 1550s. So what they want to say is really, maybe they started eating the turkey. We didn't require a Masorah then. Rashi said there's a Masorah. Rashi doesn't mean we paskin like Rashi. So at the time before the Rama codified it, the halacha was, you don't need a Masorah on turkeys. You don't need a Masorah on birds. And as long as it has the Siman, if you can figure it out through the Simanim, that doesn't sound a Doris, it's good. And then what happened was, the Rama codified it in Shulchan Aruch, but that's later. So you had the old grandfather clause. Like the Gemara, Gemara talks about Basa and Nechira, like the animal they ate in the Midbar. So now that it came into Israel, it was Usher, so you discuss what about, so in that case, the Gemara says it's a Teiku, but they talk about it, the Rishonim talk about it, the Isser of cheese, Cholavakum. So let's say it was Mutter before, so discussion, can you continue eating it? So, so that's how some want to say that it's the grandfather clause. Since turkey began before the Rama instituted the Masorah, so we don't need a Masorah. That's what he means. Or some say no. The Gemara in Chulin Daf Hey about, we know the Gemara talks about Behemto Shel Tzadikim. That HaKadosh Baruch Hu makes sure that no Takola comes out Yadam. So too, Tzadikim Atzman Lo Kol Shechein. So therefore, if all the Jews are eating it for so many years, it must be an eye, because obviously if it's you have incidents, doesn't mean the incident with the chickens and munsies. Obviously you find out it's treif. But here, if people are eating this bird and it has the simanim, so therefore we assume, so that you're not going to change it, Or thirdly, perhaps the pshat is, we do have a Masorah. It's a post facto Masorah. That once, since the Jews have been eating it for a couple hundred years and they watched it, it's not a dore, so therefore it's a go. So whatever explanation you want, the turkey is accepted. Even though we originally didn't have a Masorah. So what about the Muscovy duck? So that wasn't so fortunate. Well, we'll see if it wasn't. I think in the late 1800s, it came to America. There was a rav in New Orleans who also this one before I, one last thing, on the turkey. So another thing they say is we have a tradition that only kosher animals could crossbreed. So the turkey and chickens can't have kids, so it must be kosher. That's another dispute because the Gemara talks about animals. So everyone agrees it applies to animals. It's a machlokas to Chasam Sofer and the Avnei Nezer, whether it applies to other, to birds as well. And even if you assume it applies, so I think the Chacham Sofer says only animals, the Avnei Nezer says even birds, but then the Tziv says there's a further dispute, even if you want to tell me it applies to birds, there's a further machlokas, do they have to naturally conceive, like on their own, the chicken will live with the turkey? Or it means through artificial insemination, they could become pregnant. So that's the first. So the turkeys and chickens won't breed together. They only breed if you force them together. So they have, that's the first. Yeah, so then that was just another debate by the turkey there. So either way, the bottom line. So the Muscovy, getting back to the Muscovy duck. So so there was actually a rav in New Orleans, a Talmud of the Chasam Sofer. Got smicha from the Chasam Sofer. And he looked at the, I guess he came to New Orleans, the shochtim were all, they weren't, I don't think they were Shomer Shabbos, they weren't from, and they were shechting Muscovy duck. He said, the Russer. And he, I think he sent it to Rav Shimcha with Al Hirsch in Germany. He said, yeah, it's Usher. So in New Orleans, you know, so he said, you can't have them. And then later on, they sent these ducks to Rav Shmuel Salant in Yerushalayim. He said they were good. So that was a big, so that was a big tumult with the Muscovy duck. So, in Eretz Yisrael used to come up. I think they had these pogra, whatever they call them, goose livers, where they used to force feed them, and it came up. But today, what happened was the big tumult in Satmarville, in Monroe, probably, or in Pennsylvania, within 10 years ago, maybe less, that they found out they were, together with other ducks, they were slaughtering Muscovy ducks. So ones want to bring a raya. If they didn't know the difference, clearly Muscovy ducks must be similar. Others said no. So the, either way, that was a big tumult. So in, the bottom line is in America, I don't think any hashkacha will give it, and perhaps we'll get into why, but cause it could be because perhaps maybe once you could debate this, but this Rav, the Talmud of the Chasam Sofer in New Orleans, maybe he's considered the Masorah in America. You know, you could debate whether, because one person said it, does that create a Masorah? But I think OU, because of that, will not give a, they won't give Hashkacha, you know, it might be kosher, but they're not going to put the OU, because since they feel there was a Masorah in America not to eat Muscovy duck, so therefore, they're not going to go ahead and say it's Mutter. In Israel, it was eaten there for many years, and it's Yesh V'Yesh. Like Rav Svi Pesach Frank, others said it was okay. They watched it. It wasn't Doris. And someone told me even in Europe they eat it. So again, so Muscovy duck in America didn't make the... But it's really no different than the turkey. The only difference is they caught the turkey, you know, 200 years later, and the Muscovy duck they caught earlier. So therefore, it's not as accepted. You know, so yesh v'yesh, it's hard to say it's treif, but I'm saying, you know, that's the issue with the Muscovy duck. Right? So, moving on to our next, so let's move on to, I guess we'll discuss fish for a minute. So swordfish, so obviously you need fins and scales. So there's a big, so what's, so, and you don't need a Masorah, because it's impossible to have a Masorah, because it's too, the rush rice is too many fish. What is that, Finding Nemo? What was the movie? So too many fish, therefore you can't say you need a Masorah. So what happened was, before 1950s, swordfish was on the kosher list of all fish. In 1951, or in that area, I guess OU went to Rav Moshe Tengla because he was Torah Umada. He was a scientist in the Talmud Chacham, and they asked him about the fish, and he looked into it and said, they don't have fins and scales, and therefore he says, it's a no-go. Swordfish is treif, which was the kasha everyone asked them, like, what do you mean? Like, it's the Knesset HaGedola, others, but they say if the Jews were eating swordfish for 350 years already. It's places in Italy, it was common practice. Dag hacherev. So Rav Schechter always says over, the way Rav Schechter says it over is that really, he thinks, so Rav Moshe Tengler claims he went to the Rav Soloveitchik, his father-in-law, and he went to Rav Moshe, his father-in-law, and Rav Soloveitchik, his Rebbe, and they both agreed swordfish isn't kosher. On the other hand, Rav Schechter claims Rav Soloveitchik says they are kosher. So Rav Schechter likes to say, he had this in a Jewish press article, but they took it out, I think. He writes that, you know, he says the story with Rav Tengler. He says, really, he disagrees. He thinks, he says Rav Soloveitchik said they are kosher. He had one of the Rav Steinberg or Dr. Steinberg, who was a big professor in Harvard, check it out, and he still has the scales. He showed it to the Rav, and the Rav said it was good. So he thinks swordfish is kosher. He wants to claim, this isn't Rav Tengler, he claims Rav Tengler did it for meta halacha reasons. That during that time, then the conservative movement had kashrus organizations or more, and this Rav Isaac Klein, I think his name was, they said swordfish is kosher. So at that point, it was, you know, that was one of the big Orthodox conservative divides. I guess it was a big issue then. So in order for him to distance himself from the conservative movement, he came out and said swordfish is kosher. See, that's what Rav Schechter says. Rav Tengler says, that's great. No, that's not why I'm doing it. So Rav Schechter likes to say he won. In that case, he won. Once he said it's a conservative, so everyone stopped eating it. So in that case, and he separated them. He says it's really kosher. It's a debate whether he actually eat it or not. Like, if he says it's kosher, why wouldn't he eat it? And then, but it's hard to get the swordfish practically, but because it's a big fish, and etc. Apparently, it tastes good. I think Rav Slifkin had it in one of his dinners at the Biblical Museum. So what happened was, I heard Rav Tengler say when I think he was speaking in Eretz Israel, like last year maybe. Right after this article came out in the Jewish press about what Rav Schechter, by the way, Rav Moshe Tengler was his high school Rebbe, I think in grade 9. He was his best Rebbe ever, he likes to say. He just did Gemara Rashi Tosfos, and he finished the whole Masechta. So either way, he comes out, I think the way he says that he met Rav Schechter at a wedding, and he said, you're going through a midlife crisis? You have nothing else to write about? You make up the stuff about the swordfish? He said to him, have you, you were in Washington. Did you ever look at a? Did you ever see a swordfish? And he claims Rav Schechter said no, he never saw it. He said, how could you paskin the shiloh if you never saw a swordfish? Either way, I've heard Rav Schechter say like he's looked at, you know, swordfish. I don't want pictures. Either way, he doesn't have to of an expert here. But either way, that's a whole big tumult between them. So therefore, the bottom line: No Orthodox hashgacha gives on the swordfish today. In Eretz Israel, I think at one point, again, that was in Rav Herzog, others, Rav Unterman, they all said it was good. So at one point in Eretz Israel, they gave hashgachas, now I think they don't. So the bottom line is in America, so what's the issue, the halachic issue with the swordfish? So the swordfish has scales attached on both sides. It's hard to know what the issue is because everyone claims it's a different issue. So not only the Rav Tengler, but Rav Sitz Eliezer says it's no good. It's treif, the swordfish. He says, but the fish they used to eat, and that's what Rav Tengler says, it was the sailfish. The many fish have swords, so the Dag HaCherev could have meant many things. So Rav Tengler basically claims the sailfish is kosher, but the swordfish doesn't have scales, and that's it. Others claim, no, that's not, the swordfish has scales, but it's attached on both sides, and therefore, because there was an issue with the fish, the kingklip in South Africa, the scales were like soft as skin, and there was an issue with the barbuta. There's a whole debate whether a marine animal that has fins and scales. So basically, there's a Ramban that says any animal that any scales that are hard to peel off is a problem. Many assume we don't paskin that way, and there's a discussion, what happens if the scales fall off before you eat them? So again, so the Torah to me, many misum. So there are many issues. It's not, everyone agrees it's not the normal looking scales, and therefore there's debate about the scales. But the bottom line is, I'm saying, you're not going to get swordfish served to you, but it's a big open debate, you know, whether it's kosher or not. You know, according to those who did the research, there's a whole long of three, I forget his name, he's in Bar Ilan, and he does all this historical research on all these things. That's his Svi Sav, not Svi Savalovsky, he's in NYU. I think Zivotofsky. But he does all this research. He wrote a whole long article explaining, you know, he didn't pass in La Halacha, but he just said historically why he thinks they did eat the swordfish and it is kosher, you know, but etc. And that was a whole big so that was the issue of the swordfish. And then the issue of the locust. So number one is, you know, Makers Arba, Pesach. So number one, there's a whole discussion about, we could get into another time, what bracha on the locust, you make a shahako, you don't need shchita. But the issue was that there are kosher locusts, and it was apparently very common to eat, but we lost the Masorah, and only in like Yemenite communities they have it. So today, that's the question. So, could we eat locusts? So, certainly those who have a Masorah could eat it. The question is whether, what about the Ashkenaz? So, So the question is, did Ashkenaz ever have a Masorah not to eat it? So if we had a Masorah not to eat it, so then we can never eat it. But others claim, no, there was never a Masorah not to eat it. In Europe, there weren't kosher locusts. People call Rashi writes about grasshoppers, but the people who know this stuff, not, and I'm not one of them, claim that those locusts never existed during the time of Rashi. And therefore they point out that there was no, so that's the issue. Do we say the fact they didn't eat them in Europe, so therefore was there a Masorah not to eat them, and then it's problematic because those claim no, there was no Masorah not to eat it. It never existed. So therefore, if you have a, so the question is, am I allowed to take on a, if I don't have a Masorah not to eat it, and other people have a good Masorah, could I transfer the Masorah? So number one, yes and no, it depends. Number one, it's a machlokas in the Shulchan Aruch, Rush and the Rashba, you know, on that issue. But number one, you have to determine whether there was two things, whether it's a good Masorah that they have, and did you have a negative Masorah? So, you know, so it's easier said than done, but those would be the issues. So the bottom line, people in Yemenite communities continue to eat it. And in fact, I'm one of the professors from Bar Ilan who got the Masorah from, he took his students down, and when in 2004, when they were infested in a lot with locusts, they went and they ate them. And actually, locusts don't seem like a turn on for me, but the students said they tasted like French fries, which sounds pretty good to me. And he explained why. He says, the last thing the locusts eat, is that what they taste like? If they ate, like, you know, if they ate sesame, things will taste like sesame, or the last thing they ate were fries, so that's what they taste like. So therefore, again, so yesh v'yesh, whether you know, whether certainly it's Svaridim who have the Masorah could eat it. The question is, if you assume that it's a good Masorah, and if you assume there was no negative Masorah, OU claims that it's a negative Masorah not to eat it, and others like Rav Swiftskin and others claim there never was a negative Masorah because it didn't exist. They claim, and historically it comes down to if it existed or not. So that's the issue with locusts. And then, you know, bugs is also a separate issue. Another time, you know, that the microscopic bugs are in, like with fins and scales. Let's say you can't see the fins and scales. You only could see it with a microscope. So we hold the nakosha, you can't eat them. Because unless you could see them with your naked eye. So those are some, so um, So let's just summarize. These are some of the issues with kashrus. We began with the animals, chew its cud, split hooves. A para bas gomo is kosher, even though it doesn't have the signs. But a gomo bas para is a no-go, either because it's a yotzi min ha'asur or because it's a min tmeya nafkamina. Could you use it for stam sefer Torah tefillah mezuzos? And then we discussed the issue of what about the bison and the zebu. By birds, the Ramah clearly needs to need a mesora, but the Shach says it's also a mesora by to know the difference between chayas and behemoth. So what does he mean? So the Prima Gadin says this to tell me the difference between chaya and behemoth, but of course it's kosher. The Chazon Ish, Aruch HaShulchan, Chochmas Adam said no, you can't eat it. So then that was a big tumult with Rav Herzog and the Chazon Ish in the 50s. So basically, Rav Herzog thought it could, but he gave in to the Chazon Ish, but it happened later on. And in the beginning of the 2000s, and then the bottom line to now that it's crossbreeded, so therefore it's kind of like you have a Masorah today that it's kosher, so therefore basically it's accepted. Maybe certain people won't eat it in Bnei Brak, but they are Mako on the tefillah and mezuzahs and the milk and the bison, therefore we do eat because it has a simani kashrus. Then we discuss it, and so too with the giraffe. The shechita is a misnomer. Rav Sajja goes and says it's a zemer, so we have a mesorah. We don't eat it for practical purpose. Too expensive. Doesn't taste good. You know, hard to shecht. And then we discussed the birds, the turkey. Really, we do eat, but maybe we shouldn't. I mean, today it's okay, but maybe originally it shouldn't have been accepted. And then we gave, some people still don't eat turkey, but we gave the different reasons. The Rav Shlomo Kugler was against the nativ. He says you can't eat it, but assuming you eat it, either because it was before the Ramah made the halacha of Mesorah, we're not nechshul sadikim, behemto shul sadikim, or now like 200 years later, you had the Mesorah. And therefore, you had the crossbreeding issue with turkeys and chicken. And then Muscovy duck wasn't so lucky. So in America, it's not. They ate it in Israel. Maybe in Europe, they do. The fish, the swordfish, that was a major debate up until the 1950s, didn't seem to be an issue. Major debate, Rav Tengler, Rav Schechter, the Sitz Eliezer is with Rav Tengler. He assumes it's a sailfish. Many assume the swordfish is kosher, but no one's going to give hashgach on it. The issues are the scales are different, so therefore, that's why you can't eat it. And therefore, that was the issue with the king clip with the different scales, the barbuta. So the bottom line, it has different scales. It's hard to pull off. It gets into the Ramban in terms of that. And then to conclude with the Ramban is that the kosher birds were picked because, you know, a doris, you are what you eat. And that's what Ben Franklin was upset, that the eagle was the national bird of America, not the turkey, because he went with the Ramban, that, you know, that you are what you eat. Those are some of the wide world of kashas. We touched on, some different animals, birds, fish, locusts.